The less we govern and control ourselves, the more we must be controlled and governed by others, or in other words, by the government. Right? American liberty and freedom was only established upon the premise that people would govern themselves.
You're listening to The Alex Spicer Show, where we explore the fundamental principles of freedom and happiness in light of current and historical events. By exploring these principles, I hope to enlighten and inspire you to make the difference our nation needs to get through the troubled waters of today and tomorrow.
Now, before I say anything else, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, like this podcast, share it, and yes, leave a 5-star review. Anything less would just be wrong. The question that we need to answer, which is very vital to our perpetuation as a nation and civilization, is the following question: do we deserve liberty? That is the most serious and important question we can ask ourselves. One might assume that all people, or some people, are deserving of liberty, but if life can teach us anything, it is that once we feel entitled to something, we quickly lose our capacity or even our opportunity to enjoy that which we feel entitled to. For example, when nations become entitled to have things like safety, security, food, housing, or healthcare, you name it, you find those very blessings, those things that they have suddenly declared they are entitled to, and another way that they do that, and like nowadays, is we declare them to be human rights. Those very blessings begin to decline once we do that. They decline in their quality, and eventually they disappear altogether. Truly, if we desire something, we must work to obtain it or attain it. Inherited liberty is like wealth. It is easily squandered by our own negligence and decadence. Think of the parable of the prodigal son in the New Testament. The younger of the two sons decides that he's worked long enough and he wants his inherited wealth from his dad up front and right now. So his father gives it to him. Kudos for that guy, because I would not have. So he gives it to him. And this son goes on to waste all of his inherited wealth on riotous living, as the scripture says. Pretty soon, this young man had nothing, and he had created his own impoverished state. So let's just go with this assumption that nothing is given, or as my dad has always said, nothing in this life is free. If you want to have or keep what you've received, you must work for it. I recall a much earlier episode that I did. Actually, this was a couple of years back when I was really getting started in the very, very early stages. And it's still early now, of course. But I interviewed Ryan King. He's a veteran who served tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. In that episode, we discussed freedom. And that it was sort of in terms of like the Iraqi people. I had asked him some questions because freedom was really handed to the Iraqi people when Saddam Hussein was removed from power, as the United States military began to go in and have a war with them. And so when the United States military went in there and helped them establish a new government that was more democratic, they really had this freedom, this opportunity of freedom handed to them. But as many of you who are listening may know, the new government that we try to help them establish never really took off. And the people themselves clearly were not ready for such a drastic change from dictator to popular government. When I asked Ryan, why things didn't work out, he mentioned that that everything really happened so fast that perhaps the people were not ready. And that's actually true. It's very common. You're going to find this pattern. It happens all over the world and throughout time. But especially as you look at Western civilizations such as Great Britain or America, how they have gone to different places in the world and have occupied them in some way or fashion, have controlled the land in a way, and have implemented the Western culture and try to institute those sort of civil institutions. The common theme is when they pull out, the majority of those places just really just collapse back into what they were before. We need to stop glorifying what they were before, because what they were before, generally speaking, was not good for the population in general, but only good for those in power, right? Common experience that we enjoy now, where we have governments that are accountable to the people and listen to the people more for many nations of the Western world, that's a privilege and a blessing of today. That's not been typical throughout history of any nation. And when these Western nations pull out of there, right, if they just leave, we see this collapse back into what was before, and sometimes even worse, unless there is a true adoption of the culture, of the values, of what they were given, that the people were significantly shaped and prepared to take on this new form of government, this new level of liberty that they had never known before, that was really non-existent. So yeah, the people in Iraq were not ready. The people in most places are not ready. You can't just give liberty to people. In fact, it's something that must be earned. It has to be earned, because it will escape you. It will run away. Liberty is completely dependent upon the disposition of the people. So why is that? Why is it dependent upon the disposition of the people? Well, it comes, most of this really comes down to culture. Liberty, like liberty in the sense that we enjoy and that we want others to enjoy, which is popular sovereignty, it takes a type of culture and proactivity to enjoy, to have, and to keep. And this culture that, you know, it's really going to determine whether or not we do keep it. And if we break down what culture is, really it's a reflection of our values, behaviors, and beliefs. The dangerous thing is there is a major, for decades now, well, longer than decades, but especially in the last several decades, there has been major shifts in our culture shaped by political leaders and the media, where they get us to focus upon the greater evils of our natures, rather than helping us focus upon the good and uniting, or at least be feeling more inclined toward the betterment of our natures. So returning to the question, do we deserve liberty? I'm just going to say no one is deserving of anything. And if we aspire to enjoy the liberties and rights we now have, we have to work vigorously to keep them. We are only as deserving as we are active in securing liberty for ourselves. It's as simple as that. So how can we become people who can maintain our liberty and enjoy our natural and constitutional rights? The answer lies, going back to culture, it lies in the culture that we maintain. Whatever we value as a nation, as a people, whatever we believe, however we behave, that will determine the outcome. The outcome of our future, the outcome of our civil liberties and rights. And along these lines, Edmund Burke once said something that is so profound. It's a quote that I really love. What makes it so profound is that it is eternally true. This man just hit it right on the head. Here's what he said. He said, quote, "Men are qualified for civil liberty in exact proportion to their disposition to put moral chains upon their own appetites, in proportion as their love to justice is above their rapacity, in proportion as their soundness and sobriety of understanding is above their vanity and presumption, in proportion as they are more disposed to listen to the counsels of the wise and good in preference to the flattery of knaves." Society cannot exist unless a controlling power upon will and appetite be placed somewhere. And the less of it there is within, the more there must be without. It is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions forge their fetters. End quote. I know that's a long quote, but wow, that it is so awesome what he just said there. It's a really good reflection upon everything we've been talking about, upon behavior and liberty. And he says it so beautifully. He's, now let's break this down. In the first part, he says, men are qualified for civil liberty in exact proportion to their disposition to put moral chains upon their own appetites. What does it mean to have moral chains? What does that even mean? Well, we have the problem now where we have given into this irrational idea of moral relativism. But when you have moral relativism, everything breaks down, and then you create a new code of morality, which is basically the value of whoever can control the minds and will of the people, those in power. But if we actually are going to have a disposition to have liberty, where we're going to put moral chains upon ourselves, upon our own appetites, that means we have values, right? We believe that there are definite right and definite wrong. There's a distinction between right and wrong, good and bad. And that we make that clear distinction and we act upon it. And so when we say this is wrong, this is not something I should do, we put chains upon ourselves and we try not to act upon it. And so when we want moral chains, the way we secure a people, the way we have a people that are willing to, they willingly take upon themselves these moral chains that they put upon their own appetites, that is actually by having religion. Religion is one of the, actually it really is the main source of helping people establish moral chains upon their appetites, of establishing boundaries. That way they behave in such a way that they can be productive, selfless, serving, and prosperous individuals. And then what does it mean when he talks about, you know, passions or appetites? Well, what he's saying is appetites, really, those things are desires of ours that are base, those selfish desires, those passions, those cravings. If we just act so impulsively, like where we are projected to do based on all the movies out there, people just do whatever the heck they want. Apparently there's no future, there's no tomorrow. You just act on whatever appetite comes to you. Well, then you are not able to have liberty. And just think of those people who are so willing to act upon the appetite, the craving, the passion of anger and wanting retribution. So they burn cities down. They beat up people. They kill others. They try to make a point, right? They act in this rage. You cannot have liberty with such people because such people are hostile. It just, the best way I can think of it is, imagine we're all living in the old West, where basically one of the only ways to keep people from kind of taking you out or controlling you or stealing from you is to always have a pistol at your side. It was the Wild West, and what made it wild is that there were plenty of hooligans, of ruffians, of people who were more prone to act upon their appetites than to be civilized. And it took a lot of work. It took a lot of good people who were willing to do so to defend it with their guns, by their lives. And nowadays, you know, we don't have really any concept of that, but that's really what it was like. And that's a good reflection of, if we want to have a good civilized society that has liberty, we have security of prosperity and freedom of our rights, then we have to act in such a way that we are not constantly on some edge of mobocracy or tribalism. He mentions that Edmund Burke mentions, we have to love justice over the obtaining of more things. Well, that's important, because if we care about just getting more stuff of covetousness, then we don't care about justice that is equal for all people, meaning equal in the sense that there is a set standard all should abide by. Rather, we find today that there are advantages to creating injustices. And we'll even do so in the name of justice, right? Like, oh, we need social justice, which is just a farce. It's just a way of creating injustices for other people and helping others obtain things they wouldn't otherwise get, because if they can cry it loud enough, it'll be handed to them in some way. And that creates injustice. So if we can let go of that desire for things and desire justice, love justice more than things, then we'll be honest with ourselves. We'll be honest with each other. We're not going to try to steal from other people, not even craftily so, to convince them that they are needing to give to us because of some sort of collective guilt. Burke then says, in proportion as their soundness and sobriety of understanding is above their vanity and presumption. Simple enough, right? We have to be an educated people, but not educated in reconstructed history or anything else like that, but that our intellect can maybe clear, maybe sound, that we can understand truths and true principles. That's the important thing, is everyone can distort facts of things, but if we understand true principles, really understand them, we can discern what is right, what is wrong, what is an outright lie, or what might be missing additional facts or insights because it doesn't line up with what we know to be true. And just knowing that allows us to dig deep enough to discover the holes in our arguments and in our logic, in our thinking, in our rationale, and then allow us to pave a way towards better laws. That we aren't so vain, we aren't so presumptuous that we think we know everything already. And that's a major issue today, right? We are at a point where no one really regards the Constitution because we think we know better. There are people today who think they know better than the Founding Fathers, and I'll tell you what, we don't. The Founding Fathers are they were probably, I might put out there, they're probably like the most, or one of the most accurate philosophers in history ever, because they actually created a philosophy that, put into practice, worked. It wasn't just philosophy anymore. It was practice. But they philosophized about human nature, about civilization and liberty of freedom. And they got it right. They understood what formula was necessary for that to take place. But we're so vain now that we are unable to expand our understanding and see the truth. Burke then says, in proportion as they are more disposed to listen to the counsels of the wise and good in preference to the flattery of knaves. Basically, nowadays, if anyone's going to tell you the actual truth, you're going to get mad. If anyone's willing to actually say the truth, we're going to get angry and upset because we just want to hear what our perfect little echo chambers give us. And that's, or what our talking heads that we ascribe to are willing to say. The flattery of knaves. We don't grow and do good things if all we hear are the things we want to hear. He then says, society cannot exist unless a controlling power upon will and appetite be placed somewhere. And the less of it, there is within, the more there must be without. What he's saying is, in other words, the less we govern and control ourselves, the more we must be controlled and governed by others, or in other words, by the government. Right? American liberty and freedom was only established upon the premise that people would govern themselves. But we're so far removed from that. We look to the federal government to solve all ills and problems. We basically don't even care anymore so much about the local governments, when really the federal government was meant to do hardly anything and just very, very minimally just protect our rights, our freedom, and protect us from foreign adversaries. And then we were supposed to look to our local governments for all these other things. But now we're looking for Big Brother to take care of it all for us. We are not willing to govern ourselves. And instead of being a people who are willing to take responsibility and be accountable to our own actions, we try to find ways to escape that by making it legally acceptable or feasible, and therefore we assume it is morally correct. He then ends with, "It is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions forge their fetters." In other words, we will chain ourselves down. We will bind ourselves down to a place where we lose our freedom and our prosperity, bind ourselves down to a lesser civilization, to a lesser society, a diminished people, because our passions have chained us there, have chained us to this lower way of living. That just sounds like the worst. I don't want to go there. So back to the question, do we deserve liberty? The answer is self-evident. I really hope it's self-evident now that the level of liberty that we can enjoy is dependent upon the level which we are willing to play the game properly, right? To live and be a people that we live at the proper level of behaviors, of manners, of beliefs, of values that allow us to have liberty. Liberty quickly flees any people who are unbridled and act contrary to the principles of a free civil society. We prove that we are deserving of liberty by how we choose to behave right now. And seeing that liberty is clearly declining quite rapidly, we must act now to secure it. What we do today, tomorrow, and in the coming days and years will directly impact the level of liberty we enjoy. We must adjust ourselves personally, individually, as individuals. Don't look outside. I mentioned a lot of societal ills, but I've really just been talking about the symptoms of what happens in society is a symptom of what is happening internally. So look inside yourself and become the person that can maintain freedom, and then go influence others to do the same. You need to work within, and then without, you know, your exterior, your environment changes and will be elevated by you elevating yourself. Then we will have liberty. Then we will be able to perpetuate the freedoms we now enjoy. Thank you so much for listening. Like I said, subscribe, like, you know, join this channel, share with other people. Live free. Until next time.